Hello, everybody. I'm Dwayne Mancini, and welcome to another episode of the Project MedTech Podcast. If you need anything from us or would like to suggest a future guest, you can email us at info@projectmedtech.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review, and you can always visit our website, www.projectmedtech.com, or follow us on LinkedIn. On March 1st, we'll be creating separate channels for our Project MedTech podcast and our MedTech Money podcast. So if you are a fan of both podcasts, please search Project MedTech on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe to both channels. Both of them will be found at our website as well. In this episode, our guest, Joe Runge, and I discuss what is going on at UniTech, his background on what led him to UniTech, the importance of intellectual property and the reason companies struggle with this topic, the difficulty of when a company might have to expand out of a local ecosystem in order to continue the success of their company, the challenge with capital for Midwestern companies, technology that is coming out of UniTech, non-dilutive funding in the medtech space and its importance, where UniTech is going next, and so much more. So without further ado, my discussion with Joe Runge.
Medical innovation starts with medical discussion. Talking about the future and what comes next with Project MedTech.
Joe, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dwayne. How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's good to have you on. Before we get started, it says it in your title, but you're the director at UniTech?
Associate director. I worked under Dr. Rodney Markman, who is my supervisor.
Okay. For those people who don't know, based on looking at the name, where is UniTech and where are you?
So UniTech is Omaha's university startup incubator. We are a shared institute between the University of Nebraska-Omaha and the University of Nebraska Medical Center. We're graciously supported by the state. We're the first shared institute between UNO and UNMC. And our emphasis is principally on medical technology. And so the idea is, how do we use the brilliant minds of the University of Nebraska Medical Center, the University of Nebraska-Omaha, to collaboratively build entrepreneurial medical technology projects?
Okay. For those who don't know, in terms of their Nebraska geography, Omaha, Lincoln, right? Those are two big cities that I think of when I think of Nebraska. This is all on the eastern side of the state. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, it's all relative. So, yeah. Omaha is about as far east as you can get. If you're east of Omaha, you're in Iowa. So right. we're there. And then Lincoln is about 40 miles to the west of us, which is still very much into the eastern side of the state.
Okay.
We got to Kearney. That's when you're starting to get to the center of the state. And then you're out to the beautiful out part of the state, which is all sand hills and beautiful western civilization. There's actually a lovely town called Ravenna, Nebraska, which I consider to be kind of the end of central Nebraska and the start of western Nebraska. It literally is across the highway. You sort of get to the highway and you look, and it's like a range country, and behind you, rolling hills and farm. It's amazing.
Okay, sweet. Very cool. Awesome. So before we jump into UniTech too much, I'd love to get your background, as an individual, your space, how did you get here? And then we'll go from there.
Sure. So I had kind of an unusual education. I went to the University of Iowa. And they had a program where you can get your master's degree in darn near anything, so long as you have permission. No rogue master's degree. But you could do that while you're getting your law degree. And so I opted to get my master's degree in biology while I got my law degree. And I was the first out there. Ended up taking me 4 years, but it was 4 years well spent. I ended up doing my research on pre-cellular evolution while getting my law degree. I actually originally aspired to be an environmental lawyer, and then I took an environmental law class and changed my mind rather quickly. And Iowa is the home, as everybody knows, of Herbert Hovenkamp, world expert on antitrust law, and he was my Property 1 professor. And antitrust and intellectual property are sort of handmaidens because, you know, markets and exclusivity are kind of prominently featured in both. And through him, I met the IP professor at the time, Dr. Mark Janis, who's moved on to Indiana, and really fell in love with intellectual property. Intellectual property appealed. I was a philosophy minor in college, and it really appealed to the, I don't know, the Descartes logic of, you know, what are things and how do you define them? And I love that. I view claims construction as like writing poetry in a lot of ways.
Okay.
Makes me weird. But, you know, I think that for me, for a career, you know, I'm a scientist first and foremost. And, you know, working in a legal environment, especially when I was younger, just didn't really appeal to me. I had just come off the bench and, you know, I did that while I was in law school. And the thought of just, you know, writing patents for people really wasn't as appealing to me. I was very lucky. I was able to get an internship at a biotech company in Coralville, Iowa, Integrated DNA Technologies, which is a manufacturer of oligonucleotides for PCR. I worked under a general counsel lawyer there named Roman Terrill. God, I hope I didn't get him wrong. But he was a Russian literature major.
Okay.
He really taught me. He was said the operative word in the general counsel office is counsel. Your job is to listen to people talk and make them feel okay about what they did.
Yeah.
That was really good advice. That was very, very useful for me. And the thing I really kind of learned from that job was how important it was to support the people that were doing the research work and to support them in a really tactile way. And that really appealed to me. And so when I got a chance to work at University of Nebraska Medical Center, I'm very fortunate. My father was briefly employed at UNMC. And so I have memories of this place since I was like 5 years old.
Okay.
And so I have a very complicated relationship with my employer in that sense. But, you know, in that capacity, I got a job at the tech transfer office, you know, just like you do starting out doing MTAs and CDAs and, you know, all of the bits and bobs of doing the business of tech transfer. And so, you know, in about 15 years, I kind of did everything you can do in tech transfer. I did invention evaluations, licensing, a lot of education and outreach. So UniMed is the tech transfer office for the University of Nebraska Medical Center and now the University of Nebraska Omaha. I think it's a really well-supported office for an institution of our size. We had a large number of employees, a lot of freedom, chance to really do what we wanted to do. And in that career, the thing that I found most rewarding, you know, you would get cool technologies and try to license them to existing companies and they wouldn't know what to do with you. You know, I remember we had a project that Covidien wanted to license and, you know, we got to the boardroom at Covidien. There's like, you know, six different kinds of inlaid wood everywhere. It's just, you know, the lap of luxury. I'm sitting there with my inventor. We crush it. They're like, great. What do we do next? I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. I thought you guys knew what we do next, you know? And so it's like, you know, dating in middle school. It's like, what do I do? Right.
Right.
And so I think I kind of internalized from that if you want these things to work, you got to build it yourself. And so I essentially, I had a title for years, business development manager. I guess I still do. I don't know what that means other than, you know, we try to build companies around startup companies around technologies. And so in 2017, the state approved the funding for the Unitech Institute. Dr. Markin was approved as the director and he actually invited me to join him as an associate director. I worked for a couple of years half-time in both roles. And then, in 2019, I moved over more or less full-time. I still have a part-time appointment over at UniMed. I'm over there one morning a week. So that's been a very good role for me. It's been a chance to kind of keep my hand in the portfolio, but sort of work in kind of a value-added way to support entrepreneurship and the creation of startups.
Awesome. So this is great. Couple things. I'll start with the less serious question. Iowa to Nebraska. Who is like Nebraska's big rivalry? Because I'm guessing now that I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking Iowa is more of a rival with like Wisconsin or Minnesota or Iowa State? I mean, so I'm just trying to get a feel for this, because like, yeah. Ohio State to Michigan, never, right?
Yeah. So Dwayne, I'm really glad you asked me this. It's an issue that comes up a lot. And I think one of the real problems for the other 49 states of the union is who could rival Nebraska? I mean, there is no longer state to ride a Greyhound bus across. I've done it. You know, we have the full range of diversity from the sand hills to the river. You know, so no, I don't really see Nebraska and Iowa as rivals. I often joke that I've lived around the world from Omaha to Iowa City. You know, they see a lot of the world that way. No, I think like, awesome. The main difference between Nebraska and Iowa, to be entirely candid, is rainfall. know, it was just a better state. Right. And, you know, I remember when I moved to Iowa City, I was repulsed by how many trees there were. It's like, what is going on? Where's the
Awesome. Awesome. So before we get into UniTech, your time in tech transfer, but also intellectual property, right? Intellectual property is not something I understood, and I still don't understand it. But I didn't fully grasp the importance of it until I started doing the podcast, right? And I've had a couple lawyers on, and we've kind of talked about it. So I'm curious your take on a couple things, and it's the difference between just having someone who knows how to file patents or someone who actually understands intellectual strategy and the importance of that at a very early phase. And I think it's oftentimes overlooked, but essentially that's what companies are acquiring most of the time, right? Right. So I'm curious on your thoughts there. And then if you could explain to me what the hell is freedom to operate?
I think intellectual property in entrepreneurship is really complicated, because if you bring in chief counsel for integrated DNA technologies and figure out what their IP strategy is, that is neither fish nor fowl compared to what a startup's intellectual property policy is. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the real benefits of working within a university, and, you know, most tech transfer offices use kind of a just-in-time approach. They're trying to license their stuff before they have to pay for it. And that's totally reasonable. I mean, there's just more innovation than a university should reasonably support with an IP budget. And so I think that the thing I learned is you can build an IP strategy that is going to create fences and moats around your moats and fences, but how are you going to pay for it? You know, because patents are just hideously expensive. And like, you know, you don't always get what you pay for, but it's pretty hard to do it on the cheap, especially because, you know, IP is a sovereignty racket, right? I mean, if you're the sovereign government, then you can afford intellectual property rights any which way you choose. And if you're in a lucrative market, you know, that's an issue. I think a really good example is, you know, the trajectory of U.S.-Chinese relations has really marked the value of Chinese patents for U.S. companies. You know, there was a time in which you darn tootin' better well have some Chinese rights if you're looking to build an international market. Now, it's far less relevant because there's just a general skepticism that those covenants will be honored amongst our countries. And I think that that's like a real nutshell of, you know, intellectual property, because like you have a 20-year asset. So you're going to be making a bet how the world's going to be in 20 years potentially. And if you're doing a very IP intensive business model, if your plan is to license out your pharmaceuticals, man, you know, that is quite a casino run that you're going to be having to contemplate as it's sort of structured there. So I think that you're absolutely right. The core asset of any company is going to be its intellectual property. But I do think that there are very sophisticated mechanisms to look at your intellectual property and not just to break the bank filing, you know, we'll get faculty that are, you know, filing patents in, you know, Korea. And like, Korea is a cool market, don't get me wrong, but like, it is expensive to translate anything into anything, especially if you want to do it well. And, you know, those expenses just really add up. So when you get to like entrepreneurship and intellectual property, you know, when you're raising money and half your budget is going to your IP expenditures, that's hard, you know, because
yeah.
You know, the IP is expensive, but it doesn't inherently add value. It just protects you from losing value. That's right. Like that's really hard to justify sometimes.
Yeah, it's not a value add, right? It's a not letting the value decrease, which right. is it's, yeah, it's hard to stomach, especially when you're early and you've raised a seed round or Series A and you have this finite amount of money.
The way I've kind of described it is like property is property, right? And so mm-hmm. you know, I've got a great parcel of intellectual property. I've got a portfolio of drug candidates, right? But I don't know which one's worth a damn. And so like I own the property, but I'm not going to get any value out of it until I build a highway there, until I build a parking lot, until I build a bathroom. You know, there's so much development that requires, and the development may not work. And that's what's really tricky. And so I think that rather than go the route of saying, how do I protect it? I think that the bigger challenge is, and this is what universities come across all the time, is understanding what do I protect, you know, and that's really the challenge that's faced by tech transfer these days. And I think where they are good is, you know, one of the things I really valued with Unimed is we were a very licensing focused tech transfer, still are. And to me, that licensing effort can really inform your startup efforts. To me, I'm not necessarily really focused on what drugs are going to be successful. I'm focused on what drugs Pfizer is going to think are going to be successful. Because in the end, my business model is selling the company to them. And I think that that's kind of an IP focus. But the other thing I really found from an entrepreneurial point of view is we're really focusing on how do we scale businesses for which the IP isn't such a focus, you know, for which you are going to be building sustainable business models that aren't going to create a $20 million company, but are going to create a $3 million company that's going to employ four people. Because like, you know, my colleagues in economic development, that's what they want to see. And honestly, I think that's what the people in Nebraska want to see. They want to see good jobs for their kids so they don't have to go to Kansas City, so they don't have to go to Denver, so they don't have to go to Des Moines. You know, I think all of that is really balancing that. How do we do the technology development, you know, the aspirational stuff, right? How do we build cool new medical devices, develop cool new drugs, but also create some kind of sustainable economic development program? Because like, if I create a cool startup and they're going to need a $50 million round that's going to, you know, support their clinical study, I don't know how they're going to, they may not do that in Omaha. They may not have to do that in Omaha. And if they got to leave, they got to leave. And that's hard to justify for public expenditure, the likes which we have, especially because the legislature wants us to develop the local economy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a tough subject in as a whole for med tech, right? Mm-hmm. Especially with these development of these new areas where technology's coming out of, like, you know, obviously Boston and Minneapolis and San Francisco, right? It's great. There's a lot of technology coming out of there, but then you start peeling it back, and you know, Texas is making a big play in it and whatnot, and San Diego. But then you look at like the Midwest, right? And there's these pockets that are popping up of places that have some really good innovation, but then it just begs the question, you know, you just meet this tough part where it's possibly most likely public funding that is tied to keeping jobs in that specific area, but they in order for them to get to the next step, you know, they need to start expanding. And it's a difficult question. We don't have to deal with it at Project MedTech because we're that network. We're trying to bring our network to those areas and try to offer, you know, fractionalized services to keep people where they're at. But it is a difficult question. It's a difficult thought process, really. I mean, to just figure out what to do and how to do it.
I think like the bigger question too is capital, you know, because I mean, you see all these nascent ecosystems that are starting to build up, but in the end, like the further you go along, the more limited space you have to actually generate the capital. And so, or you're selling out to an existing company. So I think that like the way that I've approached it with kind of a public-minded incubator process is like, if you're doing an innovation project, you're doing the innovation project, and the innovation has to be the end in and of itself. If you're doing an economic development project, that needs to be done in a way that's anchored here. Mm-hmm. So like a really good example is, you know, Omaha has very good IT infrastructure, you know, due to our legacy as, you know, kind of the front seat of the Cold War, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, we can leverage that to build things in Omaha that are uniquely fitted to grow and scale here. You know, a good example is the world's largest freestanding biomechanics laboratories in Omaha, Nebraska. And every city has its claim to fame and a couple of things that are special about it. You know, but we have scientists that do very specific analyses of human motion, and we have really good IT infrastructure. And so we've tried to build startups in a way where remote monitoring data comes back to Omaha. It makes sense that data comes here in general, and the only people in the world who are really skilled at analyzing it, and really the only, not the only, one of the better programs that is going to be able to, you know, scale that type of work is there. So I think that for me, that's a hedge, right? That's a way in which we can start to build some of that infrastructure here. And maybe that'll be the, you know, consulting services that work with other companies. I'm not really sure it'll be the companies themselves, but at the very least, the ability to reliably produce those students and that expertise that'll be there, it'll work effectively.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about the funding as well in Nebraska. So something that's happening in Ohio is there are some venture capital, private equity groups that are kind of popping up who are going and raising money from the coasts, right? Or other larger players in the Ohio market, right? And then they're going to invest in Midwestern companies, right? But from a private side. Are you seeing that happen in Nebraska at all? Has anyone tried that? I'm just curious. It seems like, I mean, what's his nickname? The Oracle of Omaha. I mean,
Warren Buffett.
Yeah. Warren Buffett's there. Right. I mean, so is that kind of, you know, private financing an issue when companies progress to the next steps or what is that scene like in Nebraska?
So I think, you know, funding is always challenging. I don't think it's easy anywhere, you know.
Sure.
And, you know, one of the Invest Nebraska is a kind of public-private entity that was part of the, about 10 years ago, there was a really forward-thinking slate of innovation funding that the legislature approved. And Invest Nebraska has gone on to be a fabulously successful, you know, nonprofit entity that is, you know, done some amazing work in building an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Their former director went on to take a spot, actually a variety of spots, you know, throughout Silicon Valley. And it's been interesting keeping up with him because you really do get a sense of just how much stuff they see, what deal flow really looks like in those areas where you get a draw, you know, that, mm-hmm. that he sees a lot of stuff and that's cool. Right. But it also really made me realize how much of a challenge it is here. My boss, Dr. Markin, you know, he's fond of saying that Warren Buffett is kind of a drag on some of the more startup focused investments because, you know, people have really good things to do with their money, you know, and if you can reliably get a good return from a safe investment, then, you know, you got to have a really special reason why you're going to risk your money on a startup. Right. And so I think that, if you have a community like Omaha, Nebraska, which has made a lot of money by investing in Berkshire Hathaway, that's almost going to make it less likely they're going to invest in startups, you know, because the very philosophy and nature of that investment strategy is antithetical to what we're trying to do. And, you know, my boss, he's got a really good, Dr. Markin has, you know, tons of Markinisms that are really useful. My favorite is, all of his overnight successes took 10 years, but he has a very specific one he uses for what Warren Buffett recommends. So I'm gonna write it down and email it to you. So
okay, very good.
Awesome. But I think for me, you know, the challenge is, and what I'm finding in reaching out even through Midwestern investors, is that capital really is concentrated, you know, in the coast and a couple of places like Austin and a little bit of Minneapolis. And, you know, I'm interested, Dwayne, and maybe we can talk online. If there are groups in Columbus, I'd love to know them because I'm really focusing on getting startups very disciplined. You know, they have an ask, they know what they're worth, and they're, you know, able to just say it. Because I think that, you know, just I think being transactional with startups is really, really important. I understand they're all precious artworks, but in the aggregate, there is a market for artwork, you know.
Right. Yeah. So Joe, we'll talk offline because there's a couple things that are not public yet. At the time, this is probably going to air. I still don't think they will be. But regardless, I know you have connections to Rev One Ventures in Columbus. I think that's how we got connected. We're having an event there June 14th through the 16th. You should 100% be there because the people that I'm going to talk to you about offline will be at that event. So anyways, we'll talk about it. All right. So Unitech, you briefly talked about it at the beginning, but maybe just some more detail about, you know, you said medical technology focused, right? You don't hear that all the time, right? When I talk to incubators, accelerators, so yeah, we're health tech focused. Great. So give me the percentage. Well, you know, they're 80% in small molecules and maybe 20% in med tech. And maybe that 20% is like mostly digital health and maybe a few hard devices, actually hard tech. Can you just kind of give me the breakdown of maybe a little more detail of what Unitech is doing? How long, when was it created? 2019?
So the legislation that created Unitech, and I should know this, I believe it was passed in 2017.
Oh, 2017. Okay.
And there was a bit of a lag in sort of figuring out what to do with it. And I think that like what happened is there was a study that was commissioned by the state to kind of figure out what were the gaps in the ecosystem, you know, and there's a lot, you know, and I think that when that was commissioned, that was the rationale for, you know, setting up a shared institute in Omaha to kind of leverage those resources. And one of the things that was really appealed to me about Unitech is that it really didn't have a lot of direction. You know, I think that there was an aspiration. You know, we want to see more university innovation packaged up as a startup company. And that very much appealed to my experience in tech transfer, which was, you know, you get to COVIDia and you hand them a patent and a developmental timetable, and it's just like formatted incorrectly. It's like, you know, file not found, you know, I mean, that was kind of the discussion. But like, if you could have interfaced with them through their ventures group, said, oh, we have this, you know, design concept. And I think that would have been a very different conversation in retrospect. And so for me, you know, not having a lot of, you know, FDA expert wandering entrepreneurs in Omaha, what I started to figure out is, you know, I had given better deals to people because they had various skills. Why not try to recreate those skills internally within our institute so we can start training entrepreneurs who are just good at business? And I think that, you know, that is definitely a very challenging approach, but it's something that we're starting to gain some ground on, where we were able to align existing entities within the ecosystem and start repurposing them. And so we have some really amazing partners. We were funded very graciously by the Economic Development Administration in 2019 when I took over that operation. And they funded what we call the Omaha Medical Technology Pipeline. And I think that's kind of been really our organizing principle. That was one of the last I6 awards given. And when we did that, we took a local community college, both the research campuses, as well as a really strong collaboration with the College of Business Administration. And, you know, my background doing my legal work and my scientific work at the same time, I often joke, I like interdisciplinary education. I have the scars to prove it. And I think that, you know, for me, if you want to do startups, you know, I adore the iCORE program. I think it's a noble aspiration. But if you show iCORE methodology to someone who teaches business, like, what the hell? We've been doing this for years. You know? Mm-hmm. It's very one-on-one type stuff. And as we've built good collaborations with our colleagues in the College of Business Administration, it's really shown that you actually have a lot more in your ecosystem than you think. It just is less visible. You know, and Omaha could be anywhere. I love my city, and I know it's special and wonderful, but it's also very much a stand-in for a lot of other places. You know, we're not a university town. We're just a kind of mid-sized city, even a small one, really. And even with us, you know, we have injection molding experts in our community college. we have students who will, you know, 3D model just oodles and oodles of equipment. I met with this kid who is doing prototype photography, and he is just like crushing it. He just wanted to do really cool science photography, and he just put like a prototype photo down, and he goes to town. He creates like 20 terabytes worth of photos for every project. It's insane. Wow. Right? But like, you know, it's very much leveraging everything we possibly can. You know, I say this with a great deal of love, but if I see another 3D printing studio on campus, I'm just going to scream. Because you can't just buy 3D printers and think you're being innovative.
Right, right.
You need to have someone who can model stuff. You need to have someone who's going to watch them. I don't know if you've ever bought a 3D printer. It's like running a toddler. You know, they just break for no reason whatsoever if you don't look at them. You know, and so I think that like the programmatic support for the infrastructure we already had was very much what I wanted to do. How do you take all those parts, none of which are exactly what you need, but you build an ecosystem out of it? And, you know, we haven't done it. I'm going to be really clear. You know, we haven't fixed it. But, like, I've been very proud of it. It's doing more than I thought it would.
Yeah.
You know, we're now looking to apply that. You know, we have a great history in working in national security in Omaha. We want to build a kind of national security pipeline project and kind of mirror it. We've been very graciously supported by the Kauffman Foundation in our efforts to do entrepreneurial outreach, which I consider to be part of more of the job development roles. We do entrepreneurial training internally within Unitech, which is very self-centered for us, because what I really want to do is create a lot of entrepreneurs who can just start licensing university intellectual property and with university support continue to build things. We have a truly great asset. I don't know if you're familiar with the COBRI program through the NIH, but it's basically Collaborative Research Centers of Excellence. My friend Nick Stergio runs one of the COBRI facilities at the biomechanics facility. He set up a core facility which does prototyping. And just like, I know that's like really, really wonky, but they essentially can serve as an internal contract development laboratory for us. And so we now have this kind of really cool stepwise process where we have community college students build 3D models. We do initial testing of them internally in Unitech, and then we repackage them out for the biomechanics laboratory to build advanced prototypes. And it's really cool. It's really starting to produce some awesome stuff. We have a startup company that is coming out. It's called Empower Health. They have the world's first self-pacing treadmill. It uses cameras and other technology to basically adapt to whatever speed you're actually going. And it works. You can just get on and start walking. We're in negotiations with one of the largest treadmill companies in the world right now to really start proofing out their idea. That's starting to raise money this quarter. We're just launching that very shortly. We've got some really cool videos on Unitech's YouTube channel. And I think it's really emblematic of how we want to start working, which is, you know, finding entrepreneurs, pairing them with projects, using university resources to kind of co-invest, all of that to really start creating value.
So you're hitting on a key point here. Network being a huge one, right? It's something that, you know, what we're doing at Project MedTech, we're not necessarily focused on everybody's individual or local ecosystem, right? But helping bring, you know, the global MedTech community to kind of being that bridge, right? I mean, for a lot of these Midwestern startups, there's going to come a time where they have this local network that they're using, right? And oftentimes what I'm seeing as I'm going to some of these other cities is that the pieces are there. There's just not someone to organize it. Like you said, like almost exactly what you said, that's the problem at 50 other cities, right?
Right.
And then, you know, the next step of that is once you can get your stuff figured out locally, it's tapping into now the global med tech network and taking your company to the next step. And that, you know, that's where we're focusing our time is taking that network and bringing it to some of these smaller cities that maybe aren't, you know, world renowned for med tech. So you're going through this local network piece, right? And you're trying to fill the gaps. They're already there most of the time, but it's like corralling the cats or whatever that phrase is. Herding cats, whatever it is, right? So I always butcher. My wife laughs at me constantly because I butcher those kind of sayings.
I like growling cats. It's always go for alliteration whenever you can.
So. Yeah, hey, look, just
no
just,
one says herding cats. It's corralling right. cats.
I'm a dad now. I could say exactly. these things. It's funny, right? So tell me about how difficult that task is. I mean, is this? You know, I don't know how to ask this, how to ask the question, but it must be really hard because a lot of cities are failing at it.
So I think that from an institutional point of view,
yeah,
you know, institutions get siloed. And, you know, I think there's this great book. My time at Iowa was hard on me because I did so much. I didn't mm-hmm. really take the time to appreciate it. Okay. But Iowa City is a lovely city, and I wish I had in retrospect. It's one of the great regrets of my life. I wish I hadn't. Younger Joe took himself really seriously and uh-huh. had a great time, you know?
Yeah.
And I struggle with that even to this day. But one of the things I did do is I would go to the Iowa Writers Workshop, and they would give talks at this local bookstore. And there was this book that was written while I was there. I forget the author's name. It's called Gilead. And in it, the author describes what I think is one of the greatest phrases. She described nursing a grudge. You know, and to me, I think that so much of silos comes from historic distrust of other organizations and nursing grudges. And so while it is difficult to get people to show up for those meetings, what actually is fairly easy is once the boulder starts rolling, people get behind it.
Yeah.
Once people see, hey, this is working, you know, that's really important. And I give credit to my colleagues at Unitech. I work with, you know, Dr. Stephanie Kidd runs our projects are funded under the Kauffman Foundation. She is an old hand at writing a lot of nonprofit grants, and she is very focused on metrics. How mm-hmm. do we show we're doing what we're doing? And it's such a good discipline because when you could say the boulder's moving, even if it's moving slowly, that helps. I think I also have to give credit to my colleague, Stephen Hugg. He is an Omaha software executive who I was able to recruit as an entrepreneur in residence. And he is endlessly gracious in getting people from different backgrounds and kind of letting it be a difficult meeting, you know, because like you can't happy talk it, man. People got problems, they got to have problems, and you got to create a safe space for them to work it out. And it doesn't work, and it can't always work. Some people are just not going to work together, and that's fine, but you got to give them a chance to try because every once in a while they rise to the occasion, and you got to get a chance to revisit it, right? It's like, okay, since we talked last, this has happened, and it's listed there. But I also think like for us, we have a lot of grant development that we do. And those programmatic grants give you a chance to do some planning. And you invite someone to a grant planning meeting and they get to propose a budget and they get to say, why don't we try this? Especially if you start building a track record, that really helps. And so it is difficult, but maybe not in the same way I think you meant. I think that the difficult part of it is realizing that all your overnight successes take 10 years. You're going to get people to show up and have a robust plan. But like one of the things that I really take pride in is when you get the kid from the community college and the fancy scientist and the kind of flaky entrepreneur in the same room. And by the end of the hour, they're all on the same page. They all walk away with something to do, you know, like that's worth it for me. You know, I think entrepreneurship is so unglamorous and unsexy, and no one likes entrepreneurs because they're broke, you know, but when people start seeing it, you know, the vision of it, and they get in line, you know, even if it only happens like 12% of the time, that's
right. Yeah. It's cool. I love it. All right. So before we talk about some current projects within Unitech that are med tech related, where, you know, Unitech, you look out 1, 3, 5, 10 years from now, what's next? Where are you guys going? What's the next big boulder you want to start pushing?
So, you know, I think one of the things that I like my chance to work with Unitech is we spend a lot of time working on the SBRS TTR program.
Okay.
You know, I am lucky. I've worked with some Israeli entrepreneurs and Israeli startups. I think there's an amazing infrastructure in Israel right now to support development. But I got to be honest with you. I actually think if I had to pick a horse, I'd pick the SBR program, you know, because I think that having seen, I've worked on a couple of bird proposals. I've seen some IIA grants funded internally. And I think that, like, for as messy as it is, the separateness of the SBIR program, the individual programs, they all have their own issues. But you start putting it all together in the aggregate, it's an amazing program. It is not reaching its potential by any means. But I think that, like, figuring that mechanism out is critical for the innovation economy in general. It is like $50 trillion or whatever in non-dilutive funding that can fund just crazy stuff, you know? And I think that I get frustrated by, you know, how hard it is to do ambitious things in a private sense, you know, because they got to pay for themselves. And, like, that tension is good, right? You need to have that tension. But I think the SBIR program has untapped potential to really start looking at some of the just nuttier things that we could potentially do. You know, there are projects I want to do internally at Unitech, which are, like, moderately crazy, which we're never going to get private funding for. You're never going to bootstrap that. But, you know, you could start getting some really cool, you know, non-dilutive funding, which could open some doors to maybe some private funding. And I think that that program just has so much potential that that really makes me excited. And I think I'd like to be, you know, using our model, which I think is really unique for using that program, to really use that as kind of creating a almost like a non-dilutive pre-incubator and creating a class of projects that we couldn't otherwise do.
Yeah, you know, we had Emily Caparello and David McMullen from their different parts of NIH on, and they were talking about non-dilutive funding. It was episode 47 of our MedTech Money series, and episode 47. And it was a good episode, right? Just kind of talking about that non-dilutive side, because so much of med tech, when you talk about raising capital, is all private, right? And all dilutive. so
yeah, it's the most expensive money you'll ever take.
Yeah, you know? Of course. Yep.
And especially that early stage.
Yeah. That's really cool though. About where Unitech has gone, not about the expensive fundraising. All right, so current startups in the med tech space at Unitech. Can you highlight a few or some projects that you're able to share?
Yeah. So briefly mentioned Empower Health. I think that that's an amazing opportunity. I think health tech is, or fitness technology is, you know, such a cool space. I think it's very much a project that could only be made in Omaha. It's very much inspired by the biomechanics group. I can't say enough nice things about Dr. Brian Narr. He is kind of the academic sponsor of the project, but actually the original invention was done by students and technicians, which I think is really cool about the project as well. You know, so I think that everything about that project I like. It's kind of our real first project that we've done as Unitech, kind of in our current incarnation. And, you know, it's got fingerprints of everyone. My colleagues at Unimed were enormously helpful in building that. That's there. Another company that's not formally in the incubator, but for which we have a lot of connection, is a company called Respire AI. Respire AI is our Israeli, it's our Tel Aviv Omaha startup. And they are getting a pretty sizable investment, about $1 million, that's closing right now. To do a clinical study. It's a really, I think, a real, of our potential projects, it's our closest to a unicorn. So chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder is the fourth leading cause of death in the world, has no cure, no real effective treatments, has no good way to stage or progress. If you get a COPD biologist on the air, they will talk about just how fabulously complicated the disease biology is. But one of the things that biomechanics was able to do is they devised, and this is in part the great invention of Dr. Jenny Yentas, it's basically a wearable device that looks at your coupling of your breathing and your walking. One of the things I learned in doing the analysis on that project is no one knows the exact biomechanical feedback by which your body starts adjusting your breathing rate based on your exertion, which makes sense. It's probably multiple feedback loops and it's really complicated. But what Jenna realized is that if you look at the synchronization between your breathing and your walking, it's a pre-symptomatic indicator as to how dysfunctional you've become related to COPD. And so Unitech sponsored an early multi-site clinical study in the United States testing a very primitive prototype that they built. That analysis ultimately led to the construction of a more advanced prototype that attracted interest from our entrepreneurs in Israel. Nimrod Ben-Nun is the CEO of the company. They are kind of the typical Israeli entrepreneurs. They've run, you know, medical technology consulting for years and years and wanted to build their own thing. And so they took a license from my sister office at Unimed and were able to raise money from a consortium of drug companies and development companies. And so that's now going to have an advanced clinical study in Tel Aviv. And we're really excited to see that build out. I still see a lot of that analysis occurring in Omaha. We have a great inventor that's working with us. We also have some scientists in Omaha that are working with it as well. So that's a project we're really excited about.
Cool.
I also think that we have a lot of really cool companies that are a bit of legacy projects we've inherited. There's a company we have called Global Laparoscopy Solutions. They're building a ultra low cost laparoscope that actually connects to a tablet computer. Right now, there is a huge burden of surgical disease in India and China. And that's just, these are people who can afford the surgery, but these are hospital systems that don't have good solutions that work for their economies. They're not going to spend $500,000 to outfit a laparoscopy suite. And so this is a good solution for them. It's also an open market to expand laparoscopic procedures in the US as well, using them outside of the conventional laparoscopic suite. We have a company that we're building up now. It is an at-home diagnostic test. It's a cool model that we're looking to expand. It's a novel biomarker that we're hoping through CLIA certification, we can offer initially as a direct-to-consumer test to provide some really useful information people can do to help determine whether or not they're being appropriately medicated for the risk of coronary artery disease. It's going to be called Health Check that we're working with that we're really excited about advancing forward. In addition to that, we have a couple of companies that are, you know, in very, very early in stages. We have a company that's going to remove the swab from COVID testing. That'll be fun.
Nice.
Yeah, I know. So thank God. Yeah. Something right. Sooner.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have a company, it's a one-handed syringe that actually was originally invented by an ophthalmologic surgeon to do precise injections around children's eyeballs. But it's found a lot of interest in a variety of applications. Dentists like it, dermatologists really like it. And so I think one of the things we do as part of value add is just a lot of that customer discovery work. We really try to take the invention and build it out into a much more of a business concept. And then from that, that makes pairing with entrepreneurs much, much easier.
Awesome. So, you know, as you were bringing those up, I just went to Unitech's website. So for those listening in, if you go to unitech.org, you can get to their website. There's a tab at the top, portfolio companies. It's just portfolio, and there's some companies underneath there. There's an about, join, blog. The blog's really interesting as well. But they'll be, if you're listening right now, depending on what platform you're on, up or down an inch, there'll be a link to Unitech's website along with Joe's LinkedIn page as well. Joe, I really appreciate your time. This has been great, and I love learning about.
Your interest.
Yeah, no, I love learning about, you know, new areas where there's product development happening and companies spinning out and innovation happening. And, you know, like I said, it's a lot of people gravitate towards specific areas and really don't realize what's going on at some of these other areas. And I love discovering those. So hang on for a minute. We'll chat offline. Really appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Toby. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you need anything from the podcast, you can always contact us at info@projectmedtech.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.